The Two Towers, Cassette 4.
The old man was too quick for him. He sprang to his feet and leapt to the top of a large rock. There he stood, grown suddenly tall, towering above them. His hood and his grey rags were flung away. His white garments shone. He lifted up his staff, and Gimli's axe leapt from his grasp and fell ringing on the ground. The sword of Aragorn, stiff in his motionless hand, blazed with a sudden fire. Legolas gave a great shout and shot an arrow high in the air. It vanished in a flash of flame. "Mithrandir!" he cried. "Mithrandir!"
"Well met, I say to you again, Legolas," said the old man.
They all gazed at him. His hair was white as snow in the sunshine, and gleaming white was his robe. His eyes under his deep brows were bright, piercing as the rays of the sun. Power was in his hand. Between wonder, joy, and fear they stood and found no words to say. At last Aragorn stirred.
"Gandalf," he said, "beyond all hope you return to us in our need. What veil was over my sight? Gandalf!"
Gimli said nothing, but sank to his knees, shading his eyes.
"Gandalf?"
the old man repeated, as if recalling from old memory a long disused word.
"Yes, that was my name. I was Gandalf."
He stepped down from the rock, and picking up his grey cloak, wrapped it about him. It seemed as if the sun had been shining, but now was hid in cloud again.
"Yes, you may still call me Gandalf," he said.
And the voice was the voice of their old friend and guide.
"Get up, my good Gimli. No blame to you, and no harm done to me. Indeed, my friends, none of you have any weapons that could hurt me. Be merry. We meet again, at the turn of the tide. The great storm is coming, but the tide has turned."
He laid his hand on Gimli's head, and the dwarf looked up and laughed suddenly.
"Gandalf," he said, "but you're all in white."
"Yes, I am white now," said Gandalf. "Indeed, I am Saruman, one might almost say. Saruman, as he should have been. But come now, tell me of yourselves. I've passed through fire and deep water since we parted. I've forgotten much that I thought I knew, and learned again much that I had forgotten. I can see many things far off, but many things that are close at hand I cannot see. Tell me of yourselves."
"What do you wish to know?"
said Aragorn. "All that has happened since we parted on the bridge would be a long tale. Won't you first give us news of the hobbits? Did you find them, and are they safe?"
"No, I didn't find them," said Gandalf. "There was a darkness over the valleys of the Emyn Muil, but I did not know of their captivity until the eagle told me."
"The eagle," said Legolas. "I've seen an eagle high and far off. The last time was 3 days ago, above the Emyn Muil."
"Yes," said Gandalf. "That was Gwaihir the Windlord, who rescued me from Orthanc. I sent him before me to watch the river and gather tidings. His sight is keen, but he can't see all that passes under hill and tree. Some things he has seen, and others I've seen myself. The ring now has passed beyond my help, or the help of any of the company that set out from Rivendell. Very nearly it was revealed to the enemy, but it escaped. I had some part in that, for I sat in a high place, and I strove with the dark tower, and the shadow passed. Then I was weary, very weary, and I walked long in dark thought." "Then you know about Frodo?"
said Gimli.
"How do things go with him?"
"I can't say. He was saved from a great peril, but many lie before him still. He resolved to go alone to Mordor, and he set out. That is all that I can say."
"Not alone," said Legolas. "We think that Sam went with him."
"Did he?"
said Gandalf, and there was a gleam in his eye and a smile on his face.
"Did he, indeed? It is news to me, yet it doesn't surprise me. Good, very good. You lighten my heart. You must tell me more. Now sit by me and tell me the tale of your journey."
The companion sat on the ground at his feet, and Aragorn took up the tale. For a long while Gandalf said nothing, and he asked no questions. His hands were spread upon his knees, and his eyes were closed. At last, when Aragorn spoke of the death of Boromir and of his last journey upon the great river, the old man sighed.
"You have not said all that you know or guess, Aragorn, my friend," he said quietly. "Poor Boromir. I couldn't see what happened to him. It was a sore trial for such a man, a warrior and a lord of men. Galadriel told me that he was in peril, but he escaped in the end. I am glad. It was not in vain that the young hobbits came with us, if only for Boromir's sake. But that's not the only part they have to play. They were brought to Fangorn, and their coming was like the falling of small stones that starts an avalanche in the mountains. Even as we talk here, I hear the first rumblings. Saruman had best not be caught away from home when the dam bursts."
"In one thing you've not changed, my dear friend," said Aragorn. "You still speak in riddles."
"What, in riddles?" said Gandalf. "No, for I was talking aloud to myself, a habit of the old. They choose the wisest person present to speak to. The long explanations needed by the young are wearying."
He laughed, but the sound now seemed warm and kindly as a gleam of sunshine. "I'm no longer young, even in the reckoning of men of the ancient houses," said Aragorn. "Won't you open your mind more clearly to me?"
"What then should I say?"
said Gandalf, and paused for a while in thought.
"This, in brief, is how I see things at the moment, if you wish to have a piece of my mind as plain as possible. The enemy, of course, has long known that the ring is abroad, and that it's borne by a hobbit. He knows now the number of our company that set out from Rivendell, and the kind of each of us. But he doesn't yet perceive our purpose clearly. He supposes that we were all going to Minas Tirith, for that is what he would himself have done in our place. And according to his wisdom, it would have been a heavy stroke against his power. Indeed, he's in great fear, not knowing what mighty one may suddenly appear, wielding the ring, and assailing him with war, seeking to cast him down and take his place. That we should wish to cast him down, and have no one in his place, is not a thought that occurs to his mind. That we should try to destroy the ring itself has not yet entered into his darkest dream, in which, no doubt, you will see our good fortune and our hopes. For imagining war, he has let loose war, believing that he has no time to waste, for he that strikes the first blow, if he strikes it hard enough, may need to strike no more. So the forces that he has long been preparing he is now setting in motion, sooner than he intended. Wise fool! For if he had used all his power to guard Mordor, so that none could enter, and bent all his guile to the hunting of the ring, then indeed hope would have faded. Neither ring nor bearer could long have eluded him. But now his eye gazes abroad rather than near at home, and mostly he looks towards Minas Tirith. Very soon now his strength will fall upon it like a storm. For already he knows that the messengers that he sent to waylay the company have failed again. They have not found the ring, neither have they brought away any hobbits as hostages. Had they done even so much as that, it would have been a heavy blow to us, and it might have been fatal. But let us not darken our hearts by imagining the trial of their gentle loyalty in the Dark Tower. For the enemy has failed, so far, thanks to Saruman."
"Then is not Saruman a traitor?" said Gimli.
"Indeed, yes," said Gandalf. "Doubly. And is not that strange? Nothing that we have endured of late has seemed so grievous as the treason of Isengard. Even reckoned as a lord and captain, Saruman has grown very strong. He threatens the men of Rohan, and draws off their help from Minas Tirith, even as the main blow is approaching from the east. Yet a treacherous weapon is ever a danger to the hand. Saruman also had a mind to capture the ring for himself, or at least to snare some hobbits for his evil purposes. So between them, our enemies have contrived only to bring Merry and Pippin with marvellous speed, and in the nick of time, to Fangorn, where otherwise they would never have come at all. Also they have filled themselves with new doubts that disturb their plans. No tidings of the battle will come to Mordor, thanks to the horsemen of Rohan, but the Dark Lord knows that two hobbits were taken in the Emin Muil,
and borne away towards Isengard against the will of his own servants. He now has Isengard to fear, as well as Minas Tirith. If Minas Tirith falls, it will go ill with Saruman.
It is a pity that our friends lie in between, said Gimli. If no land divided Isengard and Mordor, then they could fight while we watched and waited.
The victory would emerge stronger than either, and free from doubt, said Gandalf.
But Isengard cannot fight Mordor, unless Saruman first obtains the ring. That he will never do now. He doesn't yet know his peril. There's much that he doesn't know. He was so eager to lay his hands on his prey that he couldn't wait at home, and he came forth to meet and to spy on his messengers. But he came too late, for once, and the battle was over and beyond his help before he reached these parts.
He did not remain here long.
I look into his mind and I see his doubt. He has no woodcraft. He believes that the horsemen slew and burned all upon the field of battle, but he doesn't know whether the orcs were bringing any prisoners or not. And he doesn't know of the quarrel between his servants and the orcs of Mordor, nor does he know of the winged messenger.
The winged messenger? Cried Legolas. I shot at him with the bow of Galadriel above San Geber, and I felled him from the sky. He filled us all with fear. What new terror is this?
One that you cannot slay with arrows, said Gandalf. You only slew his steed. It was a good deed, but the rider was soon horsed again, for he was a Nazgul, one of the nine, who ride now upon winged steeds. Soon their terror will overshadow the last armies of our friends, cutting off the sun. But they have not yet been allowed to cross the river, and Saruman doesn't know of this new shape in which the ringwraiths have been clad. His thought is ever on the ring. Was it present in the battle? Was it found? What if Theoden, Lord of the Mark, should come by it and learn of its power? That's the danger that he sees, and he has fled back to Isengard to double and treble his assault on Rohan. And all the time there is another danger, close at hand, which he doesn't see. Busy with his fiery thoughts, he has forgotten Treebeard.
Now you speak to yourself again, said Aragorn with a smile. Treebeard is not known to me, and I have guessed part of Saruman's double treachery. Yet I don't see in what way the coming of two hobbits to Fangorn has served, save to give us a long and fruitless chase.
Wait a minute, cried Gimli. There's another thing that I should like to know first. Was it you, Gandalf, or Saruman that we saw last night?
You certainly didn't see me, answered Gandalf. Therefore I must guess that you saw Saruman.
Evidently we look so much alike that your desire to make an incurable dent in my hat must be excused.
Good, good, said Gimli. I'm glad that it wasn't you.
Gandalf laughed again.
Yes, my good dwarf, he said. It's a comfort not to be mistaken at all points. Do I not know it only too well? But of course, I never blamed you for your welcome of me. How could I do so, who've so often counseled my friends to suspect even their own hands when dealing with the enemy? Bless you, Gimli, son of Gloin. Maybe you will see us both together one day and judge between us.
But the hobbits, Legolas broke in. We've come far to seek them, and you seem to know where they are. Where are they now?
With Treebeard and the Ents, said Gandalf.
The Ents, exclaimed Aragorn. Then there's truth in the old legends about the dwellers in the deep forests and the giant shepherds of the trees. Are there still Ents in the world? I thought they were only a memory of ancient days, if indeed they were ever more than a legend of Rohan.
A legend of Rohan, cried Legolas. Nay, every elf in Wilderland has sung songs of the old on Odrim and their long sorrow. Yet even among us they're only a memory. If I were to meet one still walking in this world, then indeed I should feel young again. But Treebeard, that is only a rendering of Fangorn into the common speech. Yet you seem to speak of a person. Who is this Treebeard?
Ah, now you are asking much, said Gandalf. The little that I know of his long, slow story would make a tale for which we have no time now. Treebeard is Fangorn, the guardian of the forest. He is the oldest of the Ents, the oldest living thing that still walks beneath the sun upon this middle earth. I hope indeed, Legolas, that you may yet meet him. Merry and Pippin have been fortunate. They met him here, even where we sit. For he came here 2 days ago and bore them away to his dwelling far off by the roots of the mountains. He often comes here, especially when his mind is uneasy and rumours of the world outside trouble him. I saw him 4 days ago striding among the trees, and I think he saw me, for he paused. But I didn't speak, for I was heavy with thought, and weary after my struggle with the Eye of Mordor. And he didn't speak either, nor call my name. Perhaps he also thought that you were Saruman, said Gimli. But you speak of him as if he was a friend. I thought Fangorn was dangerous. Dangerous? Cried Gandalf. And so am I, very dangerous, more dangerous than anything you will ever meet, unless you're brought alive before the seat of the Dark Lord. And Aragorn is dangerous, and Legolas is dangerous. You are beset with dangers, Gimli, son of Gloin, for you are dangerous yourself, in your own fashion. Certainly the forest of Fangorn is perilous, not least to those that are too ready with their axes. And Fangorn himself, he is perilous too, yet he is wise and kindly nonetheless. But now his long, slow wrath is brimming over, and all the forest is filled with it. The coming of the hobbits and the tidings that they have brought have spilled it. It will soon be running like a flood, but its tide is turned against Saruman and the axes of Isengard. A thing is about to happen which has not happened since the Elder Days. The Ents are going to wake up and find that they are strong.
What will they do? Asked Legolas in astonishment.
I don't know, said Gandalf. I don't think they know themselves. I wonder...
He fell silent, his head bowed in thought. The others looked at him. A gleam of sun through fleeting clouds fell on his hands, which lay now upturned on his lap. They seemed to be filled with light as a cup is with water. At last he looked up and gazed straight at the sun.
The morning is wearing away, he said. Soon we must go.
Do you go to find our friends and to see Treebeard? Asked Aragorn.
No, said Gandalf. That's not the road that you must take. I've spoken words of hope, but only of hope. Hope is not victory. War is upon us and all our friends, a war in which only the use of the ring could give us surety of victory. It fills me with great sorrow and great fear, for much shall be destroyed and all may be lost. I am Gandalf, Gandalf the White, but black is mightier still.
He rose and gazed out eastward, shading his eyes, as if he saw things far away that none of them could see. Then he shook his head.
No, he said in a soft voice. It has gone beyond our reach. Of that, at least, let us be glad. We can no longer be tempted to use the ring. We must go down to face a peril near despair, yet that deadly peril is removed.
He turned.
Come, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, he said. Don't regret your choice in the valley of the Emmenweald, nor call it a vain pursuit. You chose, amid doubts, the path that seemed right. The choice was just, and it has been rewarded. For so we have met in time, who otherwise might have met too late. But the quest of your companions is over. Your next journey is marked by your given word. You must go to Edoras and seek out Theoden in his hall, for you are needed. The light of Anduril must now be uncovered in the battle for which it has so long waited. There is war in Rohan, and worse evil. It goes ill with Theoden.
Then are we not to see the merry young hobbits again? Said Legolas.
I didn't say so, said Gandalf. Who knows? Have patience. Go where you must go, and hope. To Edoras I go thither also.
It is a long way for a man to walk, young or old, said Aragorn. I fear the battle will be over long ere I come there.
We shall see, said Gandalf. Will you come now with me?
Yes, we'll set out together, said Aragorn. But I don't doubt that you'll come there before me, if you wish. He rose and looked long at Gandalf. The others gazed at them in silence as they stood there facing one another. The grey figure of the man, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, was tall and stern as stone, his hand upon the hilt of his sword. He looked as if some king out of the mists of the sea had stepped upon the shores of lesser men. Before him stooped the old figure, white, shining now as if with some light kindled within, bent, laden with years, but holding a power beyond the strength of kings.
"Do I not say truly, Gandalf," said Aragorn at last, "that you could go whithersoever you wished quicker than I? And this I also say, you are our captain and our banner. The Dark Lord has nine, but we have one mightier than they, the White Rider. He has passed through the fire and the abyss, and they shall fear him. We'll go where he leads."
"Yes, together we will follow you," said Legolas.
"But first it would ease my heart, Gandalf, to hear what befell you in Moria. Will you not tell us? Can you not stay even to tell your friends how you were delivered?"
"I've stayed already too long," answered Gandalf. "Time is short, but if there were a year to spend, I wouldn't tell you all."
"Then tell us what you will and time allows,"